bald scalp and strange silvery dark skin. She glowed faintly with the same quiet blue-white light as the walls.
"What is this?"
the creature snapped in the language of the green plants. The guard captain saluted.
"Probably just a false alarm, ancient one. Maud says he saw something outside."
"Looked like a figure, ancient one,"
another guard piped up.
"Saw it myself. It tested at the wall, sinking its fingers into the stone, but was rebuffed. Then it retreated and I lost sight of it in the darkness."
So he had been seen. Damn. At least they didn't seem to know he'd crept into the building.
"Well, well," the ancient creature said. "My foresight does not seem so foolish now, does it, Captain? The powers of Threnody wish to join the main stage. Engage the device."
Kelsier had an immediate sinking feeling. Whatever that device did, he suspected it would not go well for him. He turned to bolt down the corridor, making for one of the windows. Behind him, the powerful golden light of the gemstone faded. Kelsier felt nothing.
"Well," the captain said from behind, voice echoing, "nobody from Threnody within a day's march of here. Looks like a false alarm after all."
Kelsier hesitated in the empty corridor. Then, cautious, he crept back to peek into the room. The guards and the wizened creature all stood around the device, seeming displeased.
"I do not doubt your foresight, ancient one," the guard captain continued. "But I do trust my forces on the Threnodite border. There are no shadows here."
"Perhaps,"
the creature said, resting her fingers on the gemstone.
"Perhaps there was someone, but the guard was wrong about it being a cognitive shadow. Have the guards be on alert, and leave the device on just in case. This timing strikes me as too opportune to be coincidental. I must speak with the rest of the Eiri."
As she said the word, this time Kelsier got a sense of its meaning in the language of the green plants. It meant age. And he had a sudden impression of a strange symbol made from four dots and some lines that curved, like ripples in a river. Kelsier shook his head, dispelling the vision. The creature was walking in Kelsier's direction. He scrambled away, barely reaching a window and climbing out as the creature pushed open the door and strode through the hallway. "New plan," Kelsier decided, hanging outside on the wall, feeling completely exposed. "Follow the weird lady giving orders." He let her get a distance ahead of him, then entered the corridor and followed silently. She rounded the outer corridor of the fortress before eventually reaching the end of it, where it stopped at a guarded door. She passed inside, and Kelsier thought for a moment, then climbed out another window. He had to be careful. If the guards above weren't already keeping close watch on the walls, they soon would be. Unfortunately, he doubted he could get through that doorway without bringing every guard in the place down on him. Instead, he climbed along the outside of the fortress until he reached the next window past the guarded door. This one was smaller than the others he'd gone through, more like an arrow slit than a true window. Fortunately, it looked into the room the strange woman had entered. Inside, an entire group of the creatures sat in discussion. Kelsier pressed up against the slit of a window, peeking in, clinging precariously to the wall some 50 feet in the air. The beings all had that same silvery skin, though two were a shade darker than the rest. It was difficult to distinguish individuals among them. They were all so old. The men completely bald, the women nearly so. Each wore the same distinctive robe, white, with a hood that could be pulled up, and silver embroidery around the cuffs. Curiously, the light from the walls was dimmer in the room. The effect was particularly noticeable near where one of the creatures was sitting or standing. It was like they themselves were drawing in the light. He was at least able to pick out the woman from before with her wizened lips and long fingers. Her robe had a thicker band of silver.
"We must move up our timetable," she was saying to the others. "I do not believe this sighting was a coincidence."
"Bah!"
said a seated man who held a cup of glowing liquid.
You always jump at stories, Illinois. Not every coincidence is a sign of someone drawing upon fortune. And do you disagree that it is best to be careful? Illinois demanded. We've come too far, worked too hard, to let the prize slip away now. Reservations vessel has nearly expired, another woman said. Our window to strike is approaching. An entire shard, Illinois said. Ours. And if that was an agent of ruin the guards spotted, asked the seated man, if our plans have been discovered, the vessel of ruin could have his eyes upon us at this very moment.
Illinois seemed disturbed by this, and she glanced upward as if to search the sky for the watching eyes of the shard. She recovered, speaking firmly.
I will take the chance.
We will draw his anger either way,
another of the beings noted.
If one of us ascends to preservation, we will be safe. Only then.
Kelsier chewed on this as the creatures fell silent. So someone else can take up the shard. Fuzz is almost dead, but if someone were to seize his power as he died... But hadn't preservation told Kelsier that such a thing was impossible? You wouldn't be able to hold my power anyway, preservation had said. You're not connected enough to me. He'd seen that now firsthand in the space between moments. Were these creatures somehow connected enough to preservation to take the power? Kelsier doubted it. So what was their plan?
We move forward, the seated man said, looking to the others.
One at a time, they nodded.
Devotion protect us. We move forward. You won't need devotion, Ilreo, Illinois said. You will have me.
Over my dead body, Kelsier thought. Or, well, something like that.
The timetable is accelerated, then,
said Ilreo, the man with the cup. He drank the glowing liquid, then stood.
To the vault?
The others nodded. Together they left the room. Kelsier waited until they were gone, then tried pushing himself through the window. It was too small for a person, but he wasn't completely a person any longer. He could meld a few inches with the stone, and with effort he was able to contort his shape and squeeze through the wide slit. He finally tumbled into the room, shoulders popping into their previous shape. The experience left him with a splitting headache. He sat up, back to the wall, and waited for the pain to fade before standing to give this room a thorough ransacking. He didn't come up with much. A few bottles of wine, a handful of gemstones left casually in one of the drawers. Both were real, not souls pulled through to this realm. The room had a door leading into the inner parts of the fortress, and so, after peeking through, he slipped in. The next room looked more promising. It was a bedroom. He rifled through the drawers, discovering several robes like the ones the wizened people had been wearing. And then, in the small table by the hearth, the jackpot. A book of sketches, filled with strange symbols like the one he had visualized. Symbols that he felt vaguely he could understand. Yes. These were writing, though most of the pages were filled with terms he couldn't begin to comprehend, even once he began to be able to read the symbols themselves. Terms like adenosium, connection, realmatic theory. The end pages, however, described the culmination of the notes and sketches. A kind of arcane device in the shape of a sphere. You could break it and absorb the power within, which would briefly connect you to preservation. Like the lines he'd seen in the space between moments. That was their plan. Travel to the location of preservation's death, prime themselves with this device and absorb his power, ascending to take his place. Bold. Exactly the kind of plan Kelsier admired. And now, He finally knew what he was going to steal from them. 3. Thievery was the most authentic form of flattery. What could be more satisfying than knowing the things you possessed were intriguing, captivating, or valuable enough to provoke another man to risk everything to obtain them? This was Kelsier's purpose in life, to remind people of the value of the things they loved, by taking them away. These days he didn't care for the little thieveries. Yes, he'd pocketed the gemstones he'd found up above, but that was more out of pragmatism than anything else. Ever since the pits of Hath-Sin, he hadn't been interested in stealing common possessions. No, these days he stole something far greater. Kelsier stole dreams. He crouched outside the fortress, hidden between two spires of twisting black rock. He now understood the purpose of creating such a powerful building here at the Reaches of Preservation and Ruins Dominion. That fortress protected a vault, and inside that vault lay an incredible opportunity. The seed that would make a person, under the right circumstances, into a god. Getting to it would be nearly impossible. They'd have guards, locks, traps, and arcane devices he couldn't plan for or expect. Sneaking in and robbing that vault would test his skills to their utmost, and even then he was likely to fail. He decided not to try. That was the thing about big, defended vaults. You couldn't realistically leave most possessions in them forever. Eventually you had to use what you guarded, and that provided men such as Kelsier with an opportunity. And so he waited, prepared, and planned. It took a week or so, counting days by judging the schedules of the guards, but at long last an expedition sallied forth from the keep. The grand procession of 20 people rode on horseback, holding aloft lanterns. Horses, Kelsier thought, slipping through the darkness to keep pace with the procession. Hadn't expected that. Well, they weren't moving terribly quickly, even with the mounts. He was able to keep up with them easily, particularly since he didn't tire as he had when alive. He counted 5 of the wizened ancients and a force of 15 soldiers. Curiously, each of the ancients was dressed almost exactly the same, in their similar robes with hoods up and leather satchels over their shoulders, the same style of saddlebags on each horse. Decoys, Kelsier decided. If someone attacks, they can split up. Their enemy might not know which of them to follow. Kelsier could use that, particularly since he was relatively certain who carried the connection device. Elanoe, the imperious woman who seemed to be in charge, wasn't the type to let power slip through her spindly fingertips. She intended to become preservation. Letting one of her colleagues carry the device would be too risky. What if they got ideas? What if they used it themselves? No. She'd have the weapon on her somewhere. The only question was, how to get it from her. Kelsier gave it some time. Days of travel through the darkened landscape, keeping pace with the caravan while he planned. There were 3 basic types of thievery. The first involved a knife to the throat and a whispered threat. The second involved pilfering in the night, and the third, well, that was Kelsier's favorite. It involved a tongue coated with zinc. Instead of a knife, it used confusion, and instead of prowling, it worked in the open. The best kind of thievery left your target uncertain whether anything had happened at all. Getting away with the prize was all well and good, but it didn't mean much if the city guard came pounding on your door the next day. He'd rather escape with half as many boxings, but the confidence that his trickery wouldn't be discovered for weeks to come. And the real trophy was to pull off a heist so clever, the target didn't ever discover you'd taken something from them. Each night, the caravan made camp in an anxious little cluster of bedrolls around a campfire, much like the one in Kelsier's pack. The ancients got out jars of light, drinking and restoring the luminance to their skin. They didn't chat much. These people seemed less like friends and more like a group of noblemen who considered one another allies by necessity. Soon after their meal each night, the ancients retired to their bedrolls. They set guards, but didn't sleep in tents. Why would you need a tent out here? There was no rain to keep off, and practically no wind to block. Just darkness, rustling plants, and a dead man. Unfortunately, Kelsier couldn't figure out a way to get to the weapon. Illinois slept with her satchel in her hands, watched over by two guards. Each morning she checked to make sure the weapon was still there. Kelsier managed to get a glimpse of it one morning, and saw the glowing light inside, making him reasonably certain her satchel wasn't a decoy. Well, that would come. His first step was to sow a little misdirection. He waited for an appropriate night, then pushed himself down into the ground, sinking his essence beneath the surface. Then he pulled himself through the rock. It was like swimming through very thick, liquid dirt. He came up near where Elinoi had just settled down to sleep, and stuck only his lips out of the ground. Dox would have had a fit of laughter seeing this, Kelsier thought. Well, Kelsier was far too arrogant to worry about his pride. "So," he whispered to Elinoi in her own language, "you presume to hold preservation's power. You think you'll fare better than he did at resisting me?" He then pulled himself down under the ground. It was black as night under there, but he could hear the thumping of feet and the cries of shock from what he'd said. He swam out a distance, then lifted an ear from the ground.
"It was ruin," Elinoi was saying. "I swear it must have been his vessel speaking to me." "So he does know," said another of the ancient ones. Kelsier thought it was Ilreo, the man who had challenged her back in the fortress. "Your wards were supposed to prevent this," Illinois said. "You told me they'd stop him from sensing the device."
"There are ways for him to know of us without having sensed the orb, Illinois," another female said. "My art is exacting."
"How he found us is not the problem," Ilreo said. "The question is, why hasn't he destroyed us?"
"Preservation's vessel still lives," the other woman said, musing. "That might be preventing Ruin's direct interference."
"I don't like it," Ilreo said. "I think we should turn back."
"We have committed," Illinois replied. "We press forward. No quarreling."
The stir in the camp eventually quieted down, and the ancient ones turned back to their bedrolls, though more of the guards stayed awake than usual. Kelsier smiled, then pushed himself over beside Illinois's head again.
"How would you like to die, Illinois?"
he whispered to her, then ducked beneath the earth. This time, they didn't go back to sleep. The next day, it was a bleary-eyed party that set off across the dark landscape. That night, Kelsier prodded them again, and again. He made the next week a hell for the group, whispering to different members, promising them terrible things. He was quite proud of the various ways he came up with to distract, frighten, and unnerve them. He didn't get a chance to grab Illinois's satchel. If anything, they were more careful with it than they had been. He did manage to snatch one of the other ones while they were breaking down camp one morning. It was empty, save for a fake glass orb. Kelsier continued his campaign of discord, and by the time the group reached the jungle of strange trees, their patience had unraveled. They snapped at one another and spent less time each morning or night resting. Half the party was convinced they should turn back, though Elinoi insisted that the fact that Ruin only spoke to them was proof he couldn't stop them. She pressed the increasingly divided group forward into the trees, which was exactly where Kelsier wanted them. Staying ahead of the horses would be easy in this snarl of a jungle, where he could pass through foliage as if it weren't there. He slipped on ahead and set up a little surprise for the group, then came back to find them bickering again. Perfect. He pushed himself into the center of one of the trees, keeping only his hand outside, tucked at the back, holding the knife that Nash had given him. As the line of horses passed, he reached out and swiped one of the animals on the flank. The creature let out a scream of pain, and chaos broke out in the line. The people near the front, their nerves taut from a week spent being tormented by Kelsier's whispers, gave their horses their heads. Soldiers shouted, warning they were under attack. Ancient ones urged their beasts in different directions, some collapsing as the animals tripped in the underbrush. Kelsier darted through the jungle, catching up to those in the front. Illinois had kept her horse mostly under control, but it was even darker in these trees than outside, and the lanterns jostled wildly as the animals moved. Kelsier dashed past Illinois to a point ahead where he'd strung his cloak between two trees and lashed it in place with vines. He climbed a tree and reached into the cloak as the front of the line, haggard and reduced in numbers, arrived. He'd lashed his fire inside the cloak, and he brought it alive as they neared. The result was a burning, cloaked figure appearing suddenly in the air above the already frazzled group. They screamed, calling that ruin had found them and split apart, running their horses in a chaotic jumble, some in one direction, some in another. Kelsier dropped to the ground and slipped through the darkness, staying parallel to Illinois and the guard who managed to remain with her. The woman soon caught her horse in a snarl of undergrowth. Perfect. Kelsier ducked away and recovered his stash of supplies, then threw on one of the robes he'd found in the fortress. He scrambled through the brush, the robe catching on things, until he was just close enough for Illinois to see. Then he stepped out where she could see him and called to her, waving his hand. Thinking she'd found a larger group of her people, she and her lone guard trotted their horses toward him. That, however, only served to draw them away from the rest of the group. Kelsier led her farther from the others, then ducked away into the darkness, losing her and leaving her and her guard isolated. From there, he scrambled through the dark underbrush toward the rest of the group, his phantom heart pounding. This. He'd missed this. The con. The excitement of playing people like flutes, twisting them about themselves, tying their minds in knots. He hurried through the forest, listening to the shouts of fright, the calls of soldiers to one another, the snorts and cries of the horses. The patch of dense vegetation had become demonic disharmony. Nearby, one of the wizened men was gathering soldiers and his colleagues, calling for them to keep their heads, and started leading them back in the direction they'd come, perhaps to regroup with those who had been lost when the line first scattered. Kelsier, still wearing the robe and holding his stolen satchel over his shoulder, lay down on the ground in their path and waited until someone spotted him.
There,
a guard said.
It's...
Kelsier sank himself down into the ground, leaving the robe and satchel behind. The guard screamed at the sight of one of the ancients apparently melting to nothing. Kelsier crept up out of the ground, a short distance away as the group gathered around his robe and satchel.
She disintegrated, Ancient One, the guard said. I watched it with my own eyes.
That's one of Illinois's robes, a woman whispered, hand pulled to her breast in shock.
Another of the ancients looked in the satchel.
Empty,
he said.
Merciful Dumma, what were we thinking?
Back,
Ilreo said.
Back! Everyone get your horses. We're leaving. Curse Illinois and this idea of hers.
They were gone in moments. Kelsier strolled through the forest, stepping up beside the discarded robe, which they'd left, listening to the main bulk of the expedition crash through the jungle in their haste to escape him. He shook his head, then took a short walk through the underbrush to where Illinois and her lone guard were now trying to follow the sounds of the main body. They were doing a pretty good job of it, all things considered. When the Ancient One wasn't looking, Kelsier grabbed the guard around the neck and hauled him into the darkness. The man thrashed, but Kelsier got him in a quick lock and hold, knocking the man out without too much trouble. He pulled the body back quietly, then returned to find the solitary Ancient One standing with lantern in hand beside her horse, turning frantically. The jungle had become eerily still.
Hello, she called. Ilreo? Raina?
Kelsier waited in shadow as the calls became more and more frantic. Eventually, the woman's voice gave out. She slumped down in the forest, exhausted.
"Leave it,"
Kelsier whispered. She looked up, red-eyed, frightened. Ancient or not, she could obviously still feel fear. Her eyes darted to one side, then the other, but he was too well hidden for her to spot him.
"Leave it,"
Kelsier repeated. He didn't need to ask again. She nodded, trembling, then took off her satchel and opened it, dumping out a large glass orb. The light from it was brilliant, and Kelsier had to step back lest it reveal him. Yes, there was power in that orb. Great power. It was filled with glowing liquid that was far purer and far brighter than what the ancients had been drinking. Exhaustion evident in her every move, the woman went to climb back onto her horse.
"Walk,"
Kelsier commanded. She looked toward the darkness, searching, but didn't see him.
"I,"
she said, then licked her wizened lips.
"I could serve you, vessel. I..."
"Go,"
Kelsier ordered. Wincing, she unhooked the saddlebags and, lethargically, threw them over her shoulder. He didn't stop her. She probably needed those jars of glowing liquid to survive, and he didn't want her dead. He just wanted her to be slower than her companions. Once she found them, they might compare stories and realize they'd been had. Or perhaps not. Illinois struck out into the jungle. Hopefully they'd all conclude that ruin had indeed bested them. Kelsier waited until she was gone, then strolled over and picked up the large glass orb. It showed no discernible way of being opened other than shattering it. He held the glowing orb before him and shook it, gazing at the incredible, mesmerizing liquid light within. That was the most fun he'd had in ages. Part 6. Hero. 1. Kelsier ran across a broken world. The trouble had been apparent the moment he left the ocean, stepping back onto the misty ground that made up the final empire. Here he'd found the wreckage of a coastal city. Smashed buildings, shattered streets. The entire city seemed to have slid into the ocean, a fact he wasn't able to fully piece together until he stood above the town and noticed the shadowy remains of buildings sticking from the ocean island farther up the coast. From there, it only grew worse. Empty towns, vast piles of ash, which manifested on this side as rolling hills that he ran across for a time before realizing what they were. Several days into his run home, he passed a small village where a few glowing souls huddled together in a building. As he watched, horrified, the roof collapsed, dumping ash on them. Three glows winked out immediately, and the souls of three ashen ska appeared in the cognitive realm, their strings to the physical world cut. Preservation didn't appear to greet them. Kelsier grabbed one of them, an aged woman who, as he took her hand, started and looked at him with wide eyes.
"Lord Ruler!"
"No," Kelsier said, "but close. What is happening?" She started to stretch away. Her companions had already vanished.
"It's ending," she whispered. "All ending."
And she was gone. Kelsier was left holding empty air, disturbed. He started running again. He'd felt guilty leaving the horse behind in the forest, but surely the animal was better off there than it would have been here. Was he too late? Was preservation already dead? He ran himself hard, the heft of the glass orb weighing down his pack. Perhaps it was the urgency, but his course became even more single-minded than it had been during his trip out. He didn't want to see the failing world, the death all around him. Compared to that, the exhaustion of the run was preferable, and so he sought it, running himself ragged. He traveled for days upon days, weeks upon weeks, never stopping, never looking, until...
Kelsier?
He jolted to a halt on a field of windswept ash. He had the distinct impression of mist in the physical world. Glowing mist. Power. He could not see that here, but he could sense it all around him.
Fuzz? He said, raising a hand to his forehead. Had he imagined that voice?
Not that way, Kelsier, the voice said, sounding distant.
But yes, it was preservation.
We aren't there.
The crushing weight of fatigue hit Kelsier. Where was he? He spun about, looking for some kind of landmark, but those were difficult to find out here. The ash had buried the canals. A few weeks back, he remembered swimming down through the ground to find them. Lately, he'd just been running.
Where?
Kelsier demanded.
Fuzz!
So tired.
I know, Kelsier whispered. I know, Fuzz.
Fadrix. Come to Fadrix. You are close.
Fadrix City? Kelsier had been there before, in his youth. It was just south of... there. Just barely visible in the cognitive realm, he made out the shadowy tip of Mount Morag in the distance. That direction was north. He turned his back toward the Ash Mount and ran for everything he was worth. It seemed a brief eye-blink before he reached the city and was given a welcome, warming sight. Souls. The city was alive. Guards in the towers and on the tall rock formations surrounding the city. People in the streets, sleeping in their beds, clogging the buildings with beautiful, shining light. Kelsier walked right through the city gates, entering a wonderful, radiant city where people still fought on. In the warmth of that glow, he knew he was not too late. Unfortunately, his was not the only attention focused here. He had resisted looking upward during his run, but he could not help but do so now, confronting the churning, boiling mass. Shapes like black snakes slithered across one another, stretching to the horizon in all directions. It was watching. It was here. So where was preservation? Kelsier walked through the city, basking in the presence of other souls, recovering from his extended run. He stopped at one street corner, then spotted something. A tiny line of light, like a very long piece of hair, near his feet. He knelt, picking at it, and found that it stretched all the way along the street. Impossibly thin, glowing faintly, yet too strong for him to break.
Fuzz?
Kelsier said, following the strand, finding where it connected to another. It seemed a lattice that spread through the whole city.
Yes, I'm trying.
Nice work.
I can't talk to them, Fuzz said. I'm dying, Kelsier.
Hang on, Kelsier said. I've found something. It's here in my pack. I took it from those creatures you mentioned. The Eyrie.
I do not sense anything, Fuzz said.
Kelsier hesitated. He didn't want to reveal the object to Ruin. Instead, he picked up the thread, which had enough slack for him to slip it into the pack and press it against the orb.
How about that?
Ah, yes.
Can this help you somehow?
No, unfortunately.
Kelsier felt his heart sink further.
The power is hers. But Ruin has her, Kelsier. I can't give it.
Hers? Kelsier asked. Vin? Is she here?
The thread vibrated in Kelsier's fingers like the string of an instrument. Waves came along it from one direction. Kelsier followed them, noticing again how preservation had covered this city with his essence. Perhaps he figured that if he was going to be strung out anyway, he should lie down like a protective blanket. Preservation led him to a small city square, clogged with glowing souls and bits of metal on the walls. They glowed so brightly, particularly in contrast to the darkness of his months out alone. Was one of these souls Vin? No, they were beggars. He moved among them, feeling at their souls with his fingertips, catching glimpses of them in the other realm. Huddled in the ash, coughing and shivering, the fallen men and women of the final empire, the people even the common Ska tended to dismiss. For all his grand plans, He hadn't made the lives of these people better, had he? He stopped in place. That last beggar, sitting against an old brick wall, there was something about him. Kelsier backed up, touching the beggar's soul again, seeing a vision of a man with hands and face wrapped in bandages, white hair sticking out from beneath. Stark white hair, a fact not quite hidden by the ash that had been rubbed into it. Kelsier felt a sudden shock, a painful spike that ran up his fingers into his soul. He jumped back as the beggar glanced his direction.
"You!" Kelsier said. "Drifter!"
The beggar shifted in place, but then glanced another direction, searching the square.
"What are you doing here?" Kelsier demanded.
The glowing figure gave no response. Kelsier whipped his hand back and forth, trying to shake out the pain. His fingers had actually gone numb. What had that been? And how had the white-haired drifter managed to affect him in this realm? A small, glowing figure landed on a rooftop nearby.
"Oh, hell,"
Kelsier said, looking from Vin to the drifter. He responded immediately, throwing himself toward the wall of the building and climbing desperately up it to Vin's side.
"Vin! Vin, stay away from that man!"
Of course, yelling was pointless. She couldn't hear him. Still, Kelsier seized her by the shoulders, seeing her in the physical realm. When had she grown so confident, so knowing? Those shoulders of hers had once cringed, but now they gave her the posture of a woman fully in control. Those eyes that had once widened in wonder were now narrowed with keen perception. Her hair was longer, but her slight build somehow seemed far more powerful than it had when he'd first met her.
"Vin," Kelsier said. "Vin! Listen, please! That man is trouble! Don't approach him! Don't—"
Vin cocked her head, then leaped off the roof, away from the drifter.
"Hell," Kelsier said. "Did she actually hear me?
Or was it a coincidence?" Kelsier leaped after Vin, tossing himself carelessly from the building. He didn't have allomancy, but he was light and could fall without getting hurt. He landed softly and sprinted across the springy ground, tailing Vin as best he could, running through buildings, ignoring walls, trying to stay close. She still got ahead of him.
"Kelsier,"
Preservation's voice whispered at him. Something thrummed through him, a familiar jolt of power, a warmth within. It reminded him of burning metals, Preservation's own essence empowering him. He ran faster, jumped farther. It wasn't true allomancy, but instead was something more raw and primal. It surged through Kelsier, warming his soul, letting him reach Vin, who had stopped in the street before a large building. Soon after he reached her, she took off again down the street, but this time Kelsier managed to keep pace, barely. And she knew he was there. He could sense it in the way she leaped, trying to shake a tail, or at least catch sight of one. She was good, but this was a game he'd been playing for decades before she was born. She could sense him. Why? How? She sped up and he followed, with difficulty. His motions were clumsy. He had Preservation pushing him along, but he didn't have the finesse of true allomancy. He couldn't push or pull. He merely jumped, grabbing hold of the shattered walls of buildings, then throwing himself off in prowling leaps. Still, he grinned widely. He hadn't realized how much he had missed training with Vin in the mists, matching himself against another Mistborn, watching his protege inch toward excellence. She was good now. Fantastic, even. Remarkable at judging the force of each push, at balancing her own weight against her anchors. This was energy. This was excitement. Almost he forgot the troubles he faced. Almost this was enough. If he could dance the mists with Vin at night, then finding a way to recapture his life in the physical realm might not matter so much. They hit an intersection and turned toward the city's perimeter. Vin bounded ahead on lines of steel. Kelsier hit the ground, thrumming with Preservation's power and prepared to jump. Something descended around him. A blackness of shredding spikes, of spider-leg scratches in the air, of jet-black mist.
"Well," Ruin said from all sides,
Well, well, Kelsier, how did I not see you earlier?
The power suffocated him, pushing him toward the ground. Ahead, a small figure bounded after Vin, created of black mist and pulsing with a similar rhythm to what Kelsier had displayed. A decoy of some sort. Like he did before, Kelsier thought, imitating Fuzz to trick Vin. He struggled, frustrated, against his bonds. Preservation, in turn, whimpered like a child in Kelsier's mind, then withdrew from him. The warming power faded from within Kelsier. Remarkably, as the power dampened, so did Ruin's ability to hold Kelsier down. Ruin's strength became less oppressive, and Kelsier was able to struggle to his feet and push through the veil of sharp mists, stumbling onto the street.
"Where have you been?"
Ruin asked. The power behind Kelsier condensed, forming into the shape of the man he'd seen before with the red hair. The motions beneath the man's skin were more subdued this time.
"Here and there," Kelsier said, glancing after Vin.
He'd never catch up to her now.
"I thought I'd see the sights, find out what death has to offer." "Ah, very coy. Did you visit the Eyrie? And got turned away from them, I assume. Yes, I can guess at that. What I want to know is why you returned. I thought for certain you would flee. Your part in this is done. You did what I needed you to."
Kelsier set down his pack, hopefully keeping hidden the orb of light inside. He walked forward, strolling around Ruin's manifestation.
"My part?" "The 11th medal," Ruin said, amused. "You think that was a coincidence? A story nobody else had heard of? A secret way to kill an immortal emperor? It fell right in your lap."
Kelsier took it in stride. He'd already figured that Gemmel had been touched by Ruin, that Kelsier himself had been a pawn of the creature. But why could Vin hear me? What was he missing? He looked after Vin again.
Ruin said. "The child. You still think she's going to defeat me, do you? Even after she set me free?"
Kelsier spun toward Ruin. "Damn. How much did the creature know?" Ruin smiled and stepped up to Kelsier.
"Leave Vin alone," Kelsier hissed. "Leave her alone? She's mine, Kelsier. Just as you are. I've known that child since the day of her birth and have been preparing her for even longer."
Kelsier gritted his teeth.
"So cute," Ruin said. "You actually thought this was all your idea, didn't you? The fall of the final empire, the end of the Lord Ruler, recruiting Vin in the first place?"
"Ideas are never original," Kelsier said. "Only one thing is..."
"And what is that?"
"Style," Kelsier said. Then he punched Ruin across the face. Or he tried to. Ruin evaporated as his fist drew close, and a copy of him formed beside Kelsier a moment later.
"Ah, Kelsier," he said. "Was that wise?"
"No," Kelsier said. "It was merely thematic." "Leave her alone, Ruin." Ruin smiled at him in a pitying way. Then a thousand spindly, needle-like black spikes shot from the creature's body, ripping through the robes that made up its clothing. They pierced Kelsier like spears, fraying his soul, bringing a blinding wave of pain. He screamed, falling to his knees. It was like the stretching when he'd first entered this place, only forced, intrusive. He dropped to the ground, spasming, his soul leaking curls of mist. The spikes were gone, as was Ruin. But of course the creature was never truly gone. It watched from that undulating sky, covering everything.
"Nothing can be destroyed, Kelsier,"
Ruin's voice whispered, intruding directly into his mind.
"That's something humans can't understand.
All things merely change, break down, become something new, something perfect. Preservation and I, we're two sides to the same coin, really. For when I am done, he shall finally have his desired stillness, unchangingness, and there won't be anything, body or soul, to disturb it.
Kelsier breathed in and out, using familiar motions from when he'd been alive to calm himself. Finally, he groaned and rolled to his knees.
You deserved that, Preservation noted, his voice distant.
Sure did, Kelsier said, stumbling to his feet. It was worth trying, anyway.
2. Over the next few days, Kelsier tried to replicate his success in getting Vin to listen to him. Unfortunately, Ruin was watching for him now. Each time Kelsier got close, Ruin interfered, surrounding him, holding him back, choking him with black smoke and driving him away. Ruin seemed amused to keep Kelsier around the periphery of Vin's camp outside Fadrick's and didn't drive him away. But any time Kelsier tried to speak directly with her, Ruin punished him, like a parent slapping a child's hand for getting too close to the flame. It was infuriating, more so because of the way Ruin's words dug at him. Everything Kelsier had accomplished had merely been part of this thing's master plan to be freed, and the creature did have some kind of hold on Vin. It could appear to her, as reinforced by how it led her away from the camp one day, in a sudden motion that confused Kelsier. He tried to follow, running after the phantom that Ruin had made. It bounded like a mistborn, and Vin followed, obviously convinced that she'd discovered a spy. They left the camp behind entirely. Kelsier slowed, feeling useless, standing on the misty ground outside the city and watching them vanish into the distance. She could sense that thing, and as long as it was here, it overshadowed Kelsier. He'd never be able to speak with her. Ruin's reason for leading Vin away soon manifested. Something launched an assault on Vin and Ellen's army of Kolos. Kelsier figured it out from the bustling of the camp and was able to reach the scene faster than the people in the physical realm. It looked like siege equipment had been rolled out onto a ridge above where the Kolos camped. It rained down death upon the beasts. Kelsier couldn't do anything but watch as the sudden attack killed thousands of them. He couldn't feel any real regret when the Kolos were destroyed, but it did seem a waste. The Kolos raged in frustration, unable to reach their enemy. Curiously, their souls started to appear in the cognitive realm. And they were human. Not Kolos at all, but people, dressed in a variety of outfits. Many were Ska, but there were soldiers, merchants, and even nobility among them, both male and female. Kelsier gaped. He had never quite known what Kolos were, but he had not expected this. Common people? Made beasts, somehow? He rushed among the dying souls as they faded. "What happened to you?" he demanded of one woman. "How did this happen to you?" She regarded him with a bemused expression.
"Where," she said, "where am I?"
In a moment, she was gone. It seemed the transition was too much of a shock. The others showed similar confusion, holding out their hands as if surprised to find themselves human again, though not a few seemed relieved. Kelsier watched as thousands of these figures appeared, then faded away. It was a slaughter on the other side, stones crashing down all around. One passed right through Kelsier before rolling away, breaking bodies. He could use this, but he would need something specific. Not a Ska peasant or a crafty lord. He needed someone who... There. He dashed through fading spirits and dodged between the glowing souls of creatures not yet dead, making for a particular spirit who had just appeared. Bald, with tattoos circling his eyes. An obligator. That man seemed less surprised by events and more resigned. By the time Kelsier arrived, the lanky obligator was already starting to stretch away.
How?
Kelsier demanded, counting on the obligator to understand more about the Kolos.
How did this happen to you?
I don't know, the man said.
Kelsier felt his heart sink.
The beasts, the man continued, should have known better than to take an obligator. I was their keeper, and they did this to me. This world is ruined.
Should have known better? Kelsier clutched the obligator's shoulder as the man stretched toward nothingness.
How? Please, how is it done? Men become kolos?
The obligator looked to him and, vanishing, said one word.
Sparks.
Kelsier gaped again. Around him on the misty plain, souls blazed bright, flashed, and were dumped into this realm, before finally fading to nothing, like human bonfires being extinguished. Spikes. Like Inquisitor spikes? He walked to the slumped-over corpses of the dead and knelt, inspecting them. Yes, he could see it. Metal glowed on this side, and among those corpses were little spikes, like embers, small but glowing fiercely. They were much harder to make out on the living kolos because of the way the soul blazed, but it seemed to him that the spikes pierced into the soul. Was that the secret? He shouted at a pair of kolos, and they looked toward him, then glanced about, confused. The spikes transform them, Kelsier thought. Like Inquisitors. Is that how they're controlled? Through piercings in the soul? What of madmen? Were their souls cracked open, allowing something similar? Troubled, he left the field and its dying, although the battle, or rather the slaughter, seemed to be ending. Kelsier crossed the misty field outside Fadrix, then lingered out here alone, away from the souls of men, until Vin returned, trailed by a shadow she didn't seem to know was there this time. She passed by, then disappeared into the camp. Kelsier settled down near one of the little tendrils of preservation and touched it.
He has his fingers in everything, doesn't he, Fuzz?
Yes,
Preservation said, his voice frail, tiny.
See?
Something appeared in Kelsier's mind, a sequence of images. Inquisitors listening with heads raised toward Ruin's voice. Vin in the creature's shadow. A man he didn't know sitting on a burning throne and watching Luthadel, a twisted smile on his lips. Then, little Lester Burns. Spook wore a burned cloak that seemed too big for him, and Ruin crouched nearby whispering with Kelsier's own voice into the poor lad's ear. After him, Kelsier saw Marsh standing among falling ash, spiked eyes staring sightlessly across the landscape. He didn't seem to be moving. The ash was piling up on his shoulders and head. Marsh. Seeing his brother like that made Kelsier sick. Kelsier's plan had required Marsh to join the obligators. He had deduced what must have happened next. Marsh's allomancy had been noticed, as had the fervent way he lived his life. Passion and care. Marsh had never been as capable as Kelsier, but he had always, always been a better man. Preservation showed him dozens of others, mostly people in power leading their followers to doom, laughing and dancing as ash piled high and crops withered in the mists. Each one was a person either pierced by metal or influenced by people around them who were pierced by metal. He should have made the connection back at the Well of Ascension, when he'd seen in the pulses that Ruin could speak to Marsh and the other Inquisitors. Metal. It was the key to everything.
So much destruction, Kelsier whispered at the visions. We can't survive this, can we? Even if we stop Ruin, we are doomed.
No, Preservation said. Not doomed. Remember? Hope, Kelsier. You said
I am hope, Kelsier whispered.
I cannot save you. But we must trust.
In what?
In the man I was. In the plan. The sign. And the hero.
Vin? He has her, Fuzz.
He doesn't know as much as he thinks, Preservation whispered. That is his weakness. weakness of all clever men.
Except me, of course. Preservation had enough spark left to chuckle at that, which did Kelsier some good. He stood up, dusting off his clothing, which was somewhat pointless, seeing as how there was no dust here, not to mention no actual clothing. Come now, Fuzz, when have you known me to be wrong?
Well, there was...
Those don't count. I wasn't fully myself back then.
And when did you become fully yourself?
Only just now, Kelsier said.
You could use that excuse any time.
Now you're catching on, Fuzz. Kelsier put his hands on his hips. We use the plan you set in motion when you were sane, eh? All right, then. How can I help?
Help? I don't...
No, be decisive, bold. A good crew leader is always sure of himself, even when he isn't. Especially when he isn't.
That doesn't make sense.
I'm dead. I don't need to make sense anymore. Ideas? You're crew leader now.
Me?
Sure. Your plan. You're in charge. I mean, you are a god. That should count for something, I suppose.
Thank you for finally acknowledging that.
Kelsier deliberated, then set his pack on the ground. You're sure this can't help? It builds links between people and gods. I'd think it could heal you or something.
Oh, Kelsier, Preservation said. I've told you that I am dead already. You cannot save me. Save my successor instead.
Then I will give it to Vin. Would that help?
No. You must tell her. You can reach through the gaps in souls when I cannot. Tell her that she must not trust, pierced by metal. You must free her to take my power. All of it.
Right, Kelsier said, tucking away the glass globe. Free Vin. Easy. He just had to find a way past ruin. 3. So, Midge, Kelsier whispered to the dozing man, you got that?
Mission, the scruffy soldier mumbled. Survivor.
You can't trust anyone pierced by metal, Kelsier said. Tell her that, those exact words. It's a mission for you from the survivor. The man snorted awake. He was supposed to have been on watch, and he stumbled to his feet as his replacement approached. Kelsier regarded the glowing beings, anxious. It had taken precious days, during which ruin had kept him far from Vin, to search out someone in the army who was touched in the head, someone with that distinctive soul of madness. It wasn't that they were broken, as he had once guessed. They were merely open. This man, Midge, seemed perfect. He responded to Kelsier's words, but he wasn't so unhinged that the others ignored him. Kelsier followed Midge eagerly through camp to one of the cook fires, where Midge started chatting, animatedly, with the others there.
Tell them, Kelsier thought. Spread the news through camp. Let Vin hear it.
Midge continued speaking. Others stood up around the fire. They were listening. Kelsier touched Midge, trying to hear what he was saying. He couldn't make it out, though, until a thread of preservation touched him. Then the words started to vibrate through his soul, faintly audible to his ears.
That's right,
Midge said.
He talked to me. Said I'm special. Said we shouldn't trust none of you. I'm holy and you just ain't.
What? Kelsier snapped. Midge, you idiot! It went downhill from there. Kelsier stepped back as men around the cook fire squabbled and started shoving one another, then began a full-on brawl. With a sigh, Kelsier settled down on the misty shadow of a boulder and watched several days' worth of work evaporate. Someone laid a hand on his shoulder, and he glanced toward Ruin, who had appeared there.
Careful,
Kelsier said. You'll get you on my shirt. Ruin chuckled.
I was worried leaving you alone, Kelsier, but it seems you've been serving me well in my absence.
One of the brawlers punched Demu right across the face, and Ruin winced.
Nice.
Needs to follow through more, Kelsier mumbled. You need to really commit to a punch. Ruin smiled a deep, knowing, insufferable smile. Hell, Kelsier thought. I hope that's not what I look like.
You must realize by now, Kelsier, Ruin said, that anything you do I will counter. Struggle serves only Ruin.
Ellen Venture arrived on the scene, gliding on a steel push that Kelsier envied, looking properly regal. That boy had grown into more of a man than Kelsier had ever expected he would, despite that stupid beard. Kelsier frowned.
Where is Vin?
Ruin said.
Oh, I have her.
Where? Kelsier demanded.
Away, or I can keep her in hand.
He leaned toward Kelsier.
Good job wasting time on the madman.
He vanished. I absolutely hate that man, Kelsier thought. Ruin. He was no more impressive deep down than Preservation was. Hell, Kelsier thought, I'm better at this god stuff than they are. At least he had inspired people. Including Midge and the rest of the brawlers, unfortunately. Kelsier stood up from the rock and finally acknowledged a fact he'd been wanting to avoid. He couldn't do anything here, not with Ruin so focused on Vin and Elland right now. Kelsier had to get someone else. Sazed, maybe? Or perhaps Marsh? If he could get through to his brother while Ruin was distracted. He had to hope that the wards on that orb would shade him from the Dark God's eyes, as they had when Kelsier had first arrived at Fadrix. He needed to leave this place, strike out, lose Ruin's interest, and then try to contact Marsh or Spook, get them to relay a message to Vin. It hurt him to leave her behind in Ruin's clutches, but there was nothing more he could do. Kelsier left that very hour. 4. Kelsier was nowhere in particular when God finally died. He couldn't place the location. No town nearby, at least not one that hadn't been buried in ash. He had intended to head toward Luthadel, but with all the landmarks covered over, and with no sun to guide him, he wasn't certain he'd been going the right direction. The land trembled, the misty ground quivering. Kelsier pulled up short, looking at the sky, at first expecting that Ruin was causing this tremor. Then he felt it. Perhaps it was the small connection he had to Preservation from his time at the Well of Ascension. Or maybe it was the peace inside him that the god had placed, the peace inside them all, the light of the soul. Whatever the reason, Kelsier felt the end like a long, drawn-out sigh. It sent a chill up his spine, and he scrambled to find a thread of Preservation. They had been all over the ground earlier in his trip, but now he found nothing.
Fuzz!
He screamed.
Preservation!
Kelsier,
the voice vibrated through him.
Goodbye.
Hell, Fuzz, Kelsier said, searching the sky. I'm sorry,
He swallowed.
Odd,
the voice said.
After all these years appearing for others as they died, I never expected that my own passing would be so cold and lonely.
I'm here for you, Kelsier said.
No, you weren't. Kelsier, he's splitting my power. He's breaking it apart. It will be gone, splintered. He'll destroy it.
Like hell he will,
Kelsier said, dropping his pack. He reached inside, gripping the glowing orb filled with liquid.
It's not for you, Kelsier,
Preservation said.
It's not yours. It belongs to another.
I'll get it to her, Kelsier said, taking up the sphere.
He drew in a deep breath, then used Nash's knife to smash the orb, spraying his arm and body with the glowing liquid. Lines like threads burst out of him, glowing, effulgent. Like the lines from burning steel or iron, except they pointed at everything.
Kelsier,
Preservation said, his voice strengthening.
Do better than you have before. They called you their god, and you were casual with their faith. The hearts of men are not your toys.
Kelsier licked his lips. I understand, my lord.
Do better, Kelsier,
Reservation commanded, his voice fading.
If the end comes, get them below ground. It might help.